She is surging right now. Dr. Oz is the former TV star that's been endorsed by Trump. And then you have David McCormick, a hedge fund billionaire who's spent millions of dollars of his own money in this race. So we'll see what happens on the Republican side. On the Democratic side, it looks like John Fetterman will be the candidate on for the Democrats.
Although he did have a stroke last week. We'll leave it there, but pick it up tomorrow. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez, David Day, and thank you.
Thank you, Amy. Boy, she gets out of here quickly. It's just about 6 o'clock. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook, which is broadcasting a little bit on 90.1 FM and a little bit more on 107.3 FM, but mostly on the internet right now, WUSB.FM. Tell a friend. It's 6 o'clock, time for Off the Wall. Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this delightful Tuesday evening, joined tonight by the delightful Kyle.
Hello.
How you doing?
Very well. Yourself?
Not bad. Not bad. It's one of those, you know, spring days. Well, obviously, every day is a spring day in the spring. But it just, it kind of feels like spring finally is starting to get its act together now. You know? And plants are like, all right, we're going to start growing and it's going to be pleasant outside. Oh, I did it. I said pleasant. I, you know, it's a subjective term because, you know, I also considered stormy weather to be pleasant. I consider blizzards and cold to be pleasant. So I'm not implying by saying that it's pleasant today that it's not pleasant when it's not like today. Oh boy, these times. If I offended anybody with my characterization of today as pleasant, I am sorry. I regret the way that you misinterpreted my remarks. Yeah, actually, Kyle, how are you? Why don't you take it for a little while? I'm going to regather myself.
Just fantastic. Enjoying the new moon now. Or no, we're waning. So, yeah, it was a full moon yesterday, and it was like a full blood moon Sunday. So...
Was that blood moon what now?
Oh, I was just talking about how there was a full moon.
Uh-huh.
And a blood moon... was sort of a characteristic of where we're at in the lunar phase.
Why is there blood on the moon? What's going on?
Well, it's just how the light changes in certain positions and space and time. And yeah, so anyway, we had that. And that, yeah, is bringing on the next couple weeks of more sunshine.
We had a space station pass the other night that was really, really bright. It's minus 3.5 magnitude, which is about as bright as it gets. It's like Venus. And it rained all night long, so we couldn't see a damn thing.
Yeah, poor Stony Brook is really missed out on that.
That was unpleasant. That was unpleasant weather.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, it was.
But other than that, wow, just admiring. There's certain predictable flora and fauna that, you know, that particular tree blossoms at this time.
Yeah.
Whole bunch of weeks of cherry trees. They are doing their thing or have done their thing. And then you have other shrubs and plants that are showing their stuff. Just amazing colors. You get a lot of the green is coming in, the leaves. They're coming in. Uh-huh. Those buds of that, you know, looked a little red or maybe started to hint at some growth. That is out in force. It's gone from really sort of iridescent yellows, pale light lime colors to much darker greens and heavier colors, and it filling in spots that were exposed to the sunlight. So that's kind of, I think, really the observations that I love about this time of year the most. It's also great weather because it's nice, but it's not too hot. Mm. So fall and spring, I feel like I'm more productive because those are like transition seasons. They're not super, super cold or super, super warm. And, you know, you can plan activities for one or the other extreme, but sometimes you like to do a variety of different activities and projects, so I get hindered when I want to, like, maybe do something outside or vice versa. Anyway, you know what I mean, being inside or outside. I like changing modes frequently, so I feel like there's just this whole other world out there from having been, you know, maybe relatively closed off with winter and all these, you know, health advisories and things like that going on. So it's really pleasant to observe things while you're out there. Hope other people out there are gardening.
You were gardening and you were being observed. I don't know if you know this. The groundhog was back. Actually, I think it's a different groundhog, and he was watching you. And I think he's planning to do some raids of your, you know, the gardening that you've been doing of the plants. Because that's what traditionally he does. Although I understand, do raccoons hunt groundhogs? Because I heard some mayhem the other night, and I know where he lives, and it was coming from that area. So I don't know if there's a dispute about land or something like that, or if he has to sleep with one eye open. But there's a lot of drama out there in the garden.
It is amazing. Just the time of year, a lot of different species, things are waking up and emerging. You have birds coming out, taking flight, maybe new birds that haven't taken flight before. Watch out for animals out there, of course, along the sides of the roads.
Did you see that before? I got into a confrontation with a mourning dove on the road. Okay, the mourning dove, which, by the way, it looks like a pigeon, but grayer, and it makes that. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do the sound. No, you'll know it. Look it up. He basically just was in the road and refusing to move, or I was driving. And, you know, come on, you're a bird, I'm a car. I'll try to get around you, but there's only, so much I can do.
Very, very obstinate mourning dove. I've never seen that. It's like it was stopping to have a smoke or something just by the side, in the road there. And no doubt, and that fight, I heard that as well. The one you referenced, just be observant, everyone. Listen outside. There's all kinds of activity around you, and human and otherwise.
Well, okay.
So appreciate it. Take it in.
Before the letters start coming in, we did rat around the mourning dove, and he flew away. But he gave me a dirty look on the way out, like I did something wrong. You know, I'm sorry. It's the road. You have everything else. I don't know what's going on.
But some stories?
Well, there's something, that you might be concerned with since you're spending time in the garden. I don't know if you know about these voracious jumping worms that are apparently on the way. They can leap 1 foot into the air and destroy soil. Not while they're leaping in the air. I don't think they have superpowers like that. But apparently it's an invasive Asian jumping worm. Why is everything invasive? Pointing to Asia as the cause. I mean, come on. It doesn't seem quite right. I'm sure we have invasive things right here that get unleashed in other continents as well. It just seems like a bit of... I don't know. Just it's going to lead to all kinds of demonstrations and hatred and things. We don't need that. We don't need that. Just blame the damn worms. You don't have to blame a continent. Anyway, earthworms are generally good. They're good to have. They tend to leave the soil better than when they arrive. Wait a minute, where are they arriving from? Space? They're in the earth to start with. They're earthworms. Okay, fine. But I guess they move from one part of the garden to another. But in at least 34 states, and yes, New York is one of them, there are invasive soil nutrient gobbling, jumping earthworms, and they can, for some reason, leap a foot into the air. Their scientific name is Amynthus agrestis. Yeah. They're also called Alabama jumpers. See, now we're blaming other states. That's healthier. Alabama jumpers, Jersey wrigglers, wood eel, crazy worms. Yeah, that's my name, crazy worms. That's what I'll call it. Oh, look at these crazy worms jumping a foot in the air. Snake worms and crazy snake worms. There you go. That pretty much covers everything. Pick your name. The common names are descriptive of the way they thrash around. That's according to the USDA Forest Service soil scientist, who goes by Mac Callahan. He said in a post last month on the agency's website, they can flip themselves a foot off the ground. Beneficial earthworms, the kind that we like, they aerate the soil, help prep it for growth, work with, side by side with Kyle. But once the jumping worms have had their way in your dirt, it will have the consistency of coffee grounds and be about as useful for growing things as the dredges from those particular coffee grounds. Now, we like coffee. In fact, I'm drinking coffee right now. But what happens when you plant something in coffee grounds, Kyle?
Oh, wow. Well, you can recycle coffee grounds. I don't know. This isn't a gardening show per se, but I'll just comment.
It is now. You didn't get the orders. We're now a gardening show.
I'll just comment that if you don't get proper drainage and you don't have a good blend of different types of materials in your soil, you could get that kind of heavy, soggy soil. And depending on where you are, you have like different types of soil. So just pay attention to your own. Maybe add some amendments like perlite or peat to space those worms out and keep their muck from being all your plants have to survive on. I've noticed a bunch of worms. They're not jumping, but
then they're good. If they're not jumping, they're good worms.
Giving them extra scrutiny, and I'm gonna say that when I'm digging holes for my plants, sometimes I nick a worm or two. I don't feel as bad now.
Well, you shouldn't feel bad. I mean, you should feel bad when you stepped on the slug. That was bad, but. Earthworms, you can cut them in half, and there's two earthworms.
Well, see, I'd
learned that early on in childhood. I learned that.
I'd known that too, and taken that also into consideration when I jabbed them, incidentally, trying to to work through some planting areas, but that the aggressiveness, I have seen some squirmy looking ones and other ones that are really lethargic. Mm-hmm. So what I do, I kind of throw them to the side and then kind of rake them to the top and then hope some birds come and get them.
Well, okay. You know, birds might be the answer to this whole thing.
And the other thing I was thinking is maybe like scraping them to the surface, collecting them and throwing them on a pile of leaves to maybe do a little impromptu composting. I mean, they'll take forever to get through a pile of leaves.
Mm-hmm.
But then they'll come back like 3,000 times as strong. I don't know if this is a good idea, people. You know what? If you have an answer to worms like this, apparently the forest people don't.
But no, it's a head scratcher.
Please share your ideas.
This is worse than I thought. Jumping worms, they grow faster and they can infest soils at higher densities. That's according to researchers over at Cornell. Besides severely damaging roots of plants in nurseries, gardens, and forests, they help spread invasive plant species because they disturb the soil. So all these invasive species are working hand in hand. Now, even though many worm species don't need a mate to reproduce, jumping worms are more aggressive and can therefore overtake existing worm populations quickly. So you might see a battle of the worms out there. And if you see that, you need to take the right side and protect our worms from their worms. Can you do that?
I don't know. I mean, I know there are a lot of beneficial creatures that you can introduce. I was looking at beneficial nematodes the other day. I'm not kidding.
What's a nematode?
You know what? It's not important.
I feel like it might be, though.
Yeah, it's something you can spray, and actually, they are an organism of sorts. I don't know many details about them. That's why I was looking into
them. Are they toads? Are they reptiles?
No. They're like...
Well, those are amphibians, I think.
Yeah, they're very, very small, such that you can dilute them in a spray or something like that.
Wait,
but
frogs are amphibians, toads are reptiles? I got to look something up now.
But perhaps, yeah, maybe there's some enzymes or something that can be used in the worm battles that are going on underground. Well, but I also wonder how you're introducing them, how they are coming to be. I have some theories. I'm wondering if there are fishermen that can either use these or they've been introduced into our soils because people use them
for
fishing.
If you use a jumping worm to catch a fish, maybe you catch a more aggressive fish because the worms are jumping in the water, or maybe you spread the jumping worms into the ocean now and we get all kinds of invasive fish.
Again,
oh my God, this is a nightmare.
I don't know what is worse. What is, if anything in here is a solution, or we're just sort of airing some different perspectives on this. I don't really know. I mean,
well,
I'm curious though, also of different types of organic compost, because you're taking some compost that was created somewhere. Who knows the kinds of things they added into the compost, and then you bring that bag into your garden. Maybe you're bringing a bunch of species in without knowing it, or the company doesn't know it. You know, it's sort of as a contamination type thing.
Okay, here's an idea, and please don't take this as military advice or anything that an expert would say, because I don't know anything about worms or battle strategies. But if you were to take a worm ally, I guess is the best way to refer to the good worms, as opposed to an enemy worm, and you simply cut that worm in four pieces. Can you do that? Four pieces? Now you have four soldiers, four worm soldiers that will fight against the jumping worms. And you don't cut them, and you keep them as one. They're bigger, obviously, but I think the other worms will grow. And I probably shouldn't be talking about it on the radio, because then the enemy will get the battle plans. But we need to figure this out. We need to figure this out, because it seems like a lot is at stake. Soil is the foundation of life, according to a soil scientist. Yeah, it's also the foundation of your paycheck, I would imagine. Asian jumping worms change all that. In fact, earthworms can have such huge impacts that they're able to actually engineer the ecosystems around them. And so scientists are still trying to work this out. But who knew? Who knew that there was all this drama going on in the soil?
It's profoundly interesting, the soil science and habitats, how different ecosystems work, and the interplay and changes afoot are really, well, so varied and vast. We could go on and on.
We could, and we have. It's almost 20 after, and we've talked about worms the whole time.
I know. I want to let you continue. I know you have a lot of interesting
things. We usually only spend 5 minutes on worms, and here we are almost halfway through the show. Let me move quickly to butterflies so that we can get this over with.
Sure.
And this is better news. There was a $1.2 million state-funded project to rescue the Western Monarch, which until recently seemed to have almost disappeared from California. A year ago, the conservation organization River Partners planted 30,000 milkweeds and other flowering native species in 8 locations to restore the habitat, which is mostly in central California. Their goal at Dos Rios Ranch Preserve, restored floodplain on a former dairy ranch in Modesto, was to see if the project is working. And this is what they were dealing with. The numbers had been 1.3 million that were found in California in 1997. Those numbers dropped to fewer than 2,000 in 2021. The latest California count, which was announced this January, shot up to 250,000. So, looks like what they're doing is working. Looks like we can have an effect, a positive effect on things like this. Looks like those monarchs might actually have some hope.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And just the, you know, the little bit of effort and the attitude of changing a certain space and recreating it, making it a little bit more hospitable for another creature or something. It doesn't take much, but it can go a really, really long way. And I mean, I've been thinking about that myself, getting kind of, I want to figure out a good ground cover, like a type of like a grass or a little flower or like a wildflower mix or like a whole bunch of wildflower seeds to do a ground cover with under like, some other stuff, like for food or other plants like the sunchokes mm-hmm. and things. But I don't know. I don't know anything about it. I'm just experimenting.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's all experimentation. It's all figuring things out.
It's a great way to get outside. And yeah, I don't know. I got some weed pulling ahead of me, but enough about that.
Mm-hmm. Hey, there's this letter circulating on campus, which I thought to be pretty interesting. Concerns renaming a building. Here at Stony Brook, we have different buildings for dormitories. Typical dormitory has a name for 5 buildings, and then each of those 5 buildings has a name. Give you an example, a table or quad. We call it a quad. I believe there are 5 buildings in that quad, and one of those buildings is named Sanger. It's called Sanger College. Each building is a college. Named after Margaret Sanger, who founded Planned Parenthood. And that sounds all nice and good, but when you do a deep dive into what she stood for, who she was, you find a few blemishes. You find some pretty overt racism. You find that she was pretty rabidly anti-abortion, did not see abortion as a choice, but kind of closer to the right-wing position of today. Doesn't mean she was an evil person, just somebody that maybe you don't want to have a building named after. And when you look back on history, I don't know. I don't consider that canceling. I consider that updating, and we do that all the time. Canceling is kind of like a Stalinist thing where you erase a person from all references, from history, from giving them any credit for anything. And I don't think that's what we're seeing here, and I don't think that's what we're seeing most times people claim that they've been canceled or are worried about saying the wrong thing. I think, you know, when that happens, you're giving people too much power over what you say or think. But in any event, this letter was addressed to the campus community from the university president. Naming a campus space for an individual or an organization is an important decision because this honor signifies a connection between the namesake and Stony Brook University. With the passage of time, some communities wish to remove honors previously bestowed. In the interest of creating a transparent, thoughtful, and consistent process for making these decisions, in the fall of 2020, I, university president, announced the formation of the Renaming Buildings, Spaces, and Structures Committee. That sounds like a fun committee to be part of. Renaming Buildings, Spaces, and Structures Committee. Wow. The committee, comprised of faculty, staff, and students, established processes and principles that will guide future renaming requests. I wonder if we can name things that haven't been named yet. You know, like this particular field over here was not named for anybody. Let's, you know, have some suggestions. Anyway, this academic year, the Stony Brook University undergraduate student government submitted a formal request to rename the Margaret Sanger Residence Hall, part of the Tabler Student Housing Community. In keeping with the new process, we convened a committee and asked its members to review the request and make a recommendation. The committee voted unanimously in spring 2022 to recommend that we move forward with renaming Sanger. I am accepting that recommendation and will now take it through the established SUNY process, SUNY State University of New York, to try to accomplish this. The renaming process will begin with the university soliciting nominations for consideration. Nominations must be consistent with the university's goals and mission and should inspire current and future students, faculty, and staff. The deadline for nominations is August 31st, 2022. You know, I saw this. It took me about 5 seconds to say Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I think that's the perfect name right there. Of course, there's probably many other great names as well, but I can't vote because I don't have an account on whatever system you need to submit a suggestion. So if there's a student out there or a faculty member or somebody that is able to do that, you know what? Take this. You can take all the credit for it. No problem. Wouldn't be the first time. And, you know, make that suggestion. And that letter came from Maury McInnes, president of Stony Brook University. And bravo. I think it's a good thing. I think it's a good thing to move forward. I'm sure there are many other. I mean, do we even know who the people are that all the other buildings are named after? I bet we don't. And none of them are going to be perfect, that's for sure. But when you name a building after somebody, it should be someone that evokes pride. You know, students would rename buildings on their own. There was Morrison Hall, named after Jim Morrison. That's not what it was called by the university. That's what the students named it. There was Hendrix. I think at least one of those was officially renamed by the university after a decade or two of it being unofficially called something else. Let's make that more of an official thing where students get to name things. Maybe not after pop stars so much, but, you know, people who stand for something, people who are courageous and, you know, put their beliefs before their convenience. That's always a good thing. And that reminds me of what I did over the weekend. I had a great time. I basically turned on the TV set, but I got sucked into the world of Eurovision. If you haven't done that, you still can. It's still available online and through various streaming platforms. It is so amazing. 40 countries represented as of about a week ago. It was 40 countries. They whittled that down to 25 by Saturday. And then on Saturday, they had the most complicated voting system I've ever seen, where basically professional juries vote and then the popular vote comes in after that. And I can't keep up with it. But in the end, what I do understand is that the popular vote overwhelmingly went for Ukraine. And that was an emotional moment. But the whole thing was filled with emotional moments, just the expression of the artist with their music, with the messages in their music, and just the inclusiveness and the fun. And we need that. There's been such horror and hell in the world lately. And, you know, of course, right after this was over, I you know, went to the news and heard the horrible updates about Buffalo. We do need to escape every now and then. And Eurovision is this magic. It's funny. 40 songs, I hadn't heard a single one of them before last week. And now I know all of them just by listening to them maybe 3 or 4 times. Know something about the story, have seen the artists, have seen the reaction, and it's just, it just feels like just a wacky group to be involved with for a little while, even just as an observer, and better for it, I think. And this goes on every year, and some countries aren't even in Europe. Israel, Australia, they're not in Europe, but they participate anyway. You can't vote for your own country. So yeah, if you have a particular entry, you can vote for that entry, but you know your people vote for artists from a different place. The professional judges, I think it was from Croatia, voted for Serbia. That alone is a huge thing. There were all sorts of moments like that, and it just was very, very different. I have all the songs here, by the way, in case there's any you want to hear, Kyle, that you remember. I know you like the one from the Netherlands a lot. Very, very catchy tunes.
That's just it. Yeah, a lot of this stuff you've probably heard one way or another, or it has been playing or will be played throughout this summer. Probably will be part of albums and commercial endorsements, of course, and the concert series and festival scenes will be playing many of these tunes and on top 40 stations around the world. So the...
I'm sorry, the Netherlands took over.
But that wasn't the only song that I thought was interesting. There was just so much culture, so much fashion and costume. I realize this probably does terrify conservatives, and I don't think they should be as afraid of it. I think that, you know, it's really overblown. It's a lot more fun than people make it out to be, but this probably drives people nuts that don't get it, that aren't in on the fun. And I think that I hope more people appreciate that it is about fun and communicating through music, and there is a lot of activism and so forth.
Yeah.
And there are probably causes there that all people in one way or another can get around. So I find it is unifying in that way too. So getting back into it, certainly a great diversion given the context, but
it was just fun. It was just, you know, a lot of fun.
And it makes you realize stuff that might come off as frivolous matters. It's not that frivolous to everyone.
It's not normally my kind of music, but then again, there were different kinds of music. We played on the other show, Bulgaria, doing a, you know, flat out rocker, you know, in fact, last year a rock song won from Italy, and that's why it's being hosted in Italy this year. And since Ukraine won this year, it's going to be hosted in Ukraine next year. That'll be interesting. We'll see if they can even pull that off. But
the participation of people being able to vote, the way they break it down, very much like FA and Euro.
So complicated.
Fully like matches that level of an analytic and game progression. So it's pretty cool to just try to get your head around that aspect of how they score and rate and so forth.
What I really liked,
and the
though,
tension,
it was the individuality, because people were dressed in all different fashions and coming from all different perspectives, and but all appreciating each other, you know, all welcoming each other. It was a beautiful thing to see. It really was. And it's sad that it's not seen widely here in this country, and that we don't appreciate something like that, or there's not a global version of it. But hey, you know, I haven't been able to even see this. Last year was the first time I ever saw it. We have a show here on WUSB. Emma Backfish does a Eurovision show on Saturday nights. And I learned a lot from that. So there are people who appreciate it. There are people who are listening to the music and talking about the various struggles that artists had to have. Every single country has some other round of competition to even get to the stage where they have an entry to submit to Eurovision. It's like football. It really is. You know, with the Champions League and the Europa League and all that. It's so complicated, but really fascinating to watch.
Yes, and that show is called Meanwhile in Europe on Saturday evenings. I know she does a lot in anticipation of this event, and probably will do a wrap-up this weekend, or has already done a wrap-up of the event, and also throughout the year plays interesting stuff from the European market and dance and music scene there. Which is a great treat for everyone.
Absolutely, absolutely. So that was fun. Again, you can find the whole Eurovision competition, the two semifinals from last week and the final from Saturday. Just have it on in the background and just watch the fun and the craziness. It's really something.
It's getting even easier. We've talked about different platforms and ways to stream. Find your way to do it. These are somewhat elusive, but I know on like YouTube and online you can stream stuff after the fact, and figuring out a way to watch it around the same time is getting easier and easier. I know it's still, there's overly complicated stuff about markets and streaming and stuff, but the DRM aside, I think it's important to find a way and keep the numbers up, the interest high, so that it is carried in other markets.
Some of the pieces, though, really lend themselves to video, and every single video is on YouTube, so you can see it all for free right now if you want. Just Eurovision 2022, and you can go through all 40 of the entries. You can skip through them. Our favorite, and spoiler alert, we're going to go out with this tonight, is Moldova. And the reason we love that one so much is because it has to do with a train ride, you know, from Moldova to Romania. We did the opposite. Yeah, we went from Bucharest to how do you pronounce the city again?
Chișinău.
I always get it wrong. They're going from Chișinău to Bucharest, but the whole thing is about the train ride. And in fact, in the video, they actually stop for customs. And if you've ever been on a train that stops for customs, there's just this silence that takes over, and this kind of sternness and a little bit of fear, because you don't know if you're going to be allowed to go into the country you want to go to. And sometimes they search you, but also humor. And it's all captured in that video. So I highly recommend the video from there. You know, it's really a lot. It really is a lot to take in and to realize. We'll play that on the way out tonight. Some sad news, though, that I have to focus on. Here at WUSB, we lost one of our, longest on-air people. I'm talking about Mort McCloskey, who had been on Monday afternoons for ages and has been a part of the station. I've known him since the 1980s. And he passed away in the last week. I think he was 90 and active all the way throughout his entire life, always talking about politics and social issues. But he also was somebody who was just plain fun to be around sometimes. And we have an excerpt that we're going to play now that basically will show that. This was on this particular program back in 2010. In fact, the actual date was September 14th, 2010. Where Spiny Norman, of all people, visited the station with Mort. I'll just let it play out.
All right.
Spiny Norman, how you doing?
I'm fine.
Do you get respect? You get enough respect in your life? Because I get the
Not
feeling...
From you.
I don't think I'm getting enough respect. I really don't think...
I notice you don't have a co-host with you, so...
Well, I do now, don't I?
Yeah.
And Mort McCloskey's here, too.
Yeah, that's all the respect you need.
In decades. I haven't seen him in a long time. It's like all these people in the studio, and Finn's over there, and...
He asked us if we wanted to hear his imitation of a cat screeching.
Who did?
Mort.
Is that what he does now?
Do you want to hear it?
How long would the cat be screeching for? And this, they couldn't interrupt this. No, of course not. They had to interrupt the letters. Okay, tell me how long the cat screeching will go.
For as long as you wanted to, I guess.
Well, you know, I don't want cats to be screeching for too long, but sure, why not? It's radio.
Let me get it.
All right. Just make sure that doesn't go on infinitely. We don't need this forever. And plus, you know, we do want to take some phone calls, don't we? Is he going to... Are you going to do this, Mort? All right, Mort. This is what you're known for?
Wait a minute, I
got to
do a couple of push-ups.
I had no idea you had this kind of talent, but...
Well, no, I operate on a frequency that no one can hear unless you're a cat. So did
really?
You hear it?
So you're doing it now,
exactly.
And I can't hear you because I'm not a cat. That's. I'm going to play this back later for my cat, and we'll see what happens. Thank you, Mort.
My pleasure.
Always, always entertaining.
And that was from 2010, September, as Mort visited the station. We have a little bit more of that to play a few minutes from now. But that's a side you might not have known, because he did have many, many serious conversations on the radio, and you learn so much from him, as you do from so many people here on WUSB. But everybody has their fun side as well, and yeah, imitating a cat screeching, that was classic. Yeah, you met Mort a couple of times, right, Kyle?
Only in passing, E. I think one of my first memories was in the student union, the old radio control room, and he would be in there. I just remember just, like, him with his in his blue jeans and, you know, a hoodie or something, just coming to say hi, walking in, and he had his, like, he always had, like, a fanny pack or, like, a bag. You know, he's just, like, you know, had his kit of whatever he needed, and he just had his way of being, and it was just, like, you knew he was a character. I never was really introduced to him or anything. Maybe, like, once, but... I, of course, always listen to his show, though, during the week. I would tune in earlier in the week. And I did, I think, I have heard that clip in the past, I think, or clips of him.
You would have to have been listening to this show in 2010 to have heard that.
Was any of it on,
ever aired after that?
Not on Voli or any of the
No, that'd
archives.
Be a neat trick. That would have to go back in time for that. No, this was in 2010.
Well, I can't care about everything.
On this very show. So.
Yeah.
No, we didn't air that again. So, maybe you listened live. It's entirely possible. And we'll have a little bit more of that in a couple of minutes, but, yeah, he would be on the radio. I know Zabby, who we also lost in the last year, was on that very same day of the week. It was, a Monday staple. The thing about Mort, he always, to me, seemed to be the same age. He never seemed to get older. He just seemed to always be of a certain age and always was somebody you could talk to and hear interesting viewpoints, alternative perspectives and things like that. And that to me is truly magical. We will forever be lesser for his absence. Okay. You know what? I'm going to play the second part of it just because, I want to hear it myself. This is basically the period of time where we had changed the way that we voted in New York State. We used to have the... I thought this was more recent, actually. This was, you know, in 2010. We used to have the curtains, you know, and the levers and all that and some degree of privacy. And then we changed to the current system where you have to use a pen. And it feels like you're sending a fax more than it feels like you're voting. Well, okay, in that same show, this is actually I think I'm taking a call, finishing taking a call, and then Mort gives his impressions and ideas on things to do while voting. Take a listen.
Well, that's it. All I have to say, but I thank you for taking my call because many times when you say you're going to take calls, you get involved and it's time to get calls. So
as you can see, it's a circus here. Thank you for your call. Thanks very much. And lots of times we don't. Mort, do you have another cat for us? No.
No, but I voted today. I thought you.
Oh wait, you voted today. Hold on. Tell
I'm
us what.
I'm a live voter. I voted today.
Okay, so tell us what happened.
Well, I got a nice donut. They tried to give me a munchkin, but I insisted.
So they're
the
trying to influence your vote.
Well, I went in there. I got the donut. Uh-huh. Then they give you a little piece of paper, and they bring you to an open desk. So there's no privacy.
There's no privacy. Why can't you have privacy? Why do they have to design it so you don't have any privacy anymore?
Yeah, what I liked about the old one is that when you close the curtain, you can do all sorts of things. You can take off your clothes, and no one sees.
Are you the reason why they changed? Oh, man.
Also.
Okay, go ahead.
Also, since they're giving us a hosing anyway, in the olden days, with the curtains, you can bring in a bucket of water, a soap, and a washcloth, and do an indoor shower.
Yeah, you're the
you
reason.
You know, and that's it. And all of that's gone. It's gone. We can't do that anymore.
Speaking of things that are gone, when you use the pen to fill in the little ovals, how is that pen secured? Can you just take the pen with you, or is it tied to a table?
I didn't even consider trying that. If I thought of it, I would show you the pen right now. But
because if enough people go in there and just swipe all the pens, then all of a sudden they don't have a way.
They have more guys there than voters when I went in. There were two voters and about 20 people.
I
watching.
Know. They have to tell so many people how to do things.
And my wife had hers rejected because she was marking too many boxes.
Did she know why it was being rejected?
Well, too many. You only vote. To vote for one out of like the five running for attorney general.
Okay, so it got rejected. What happened? They gave her
another one.
All right, and basically you have two more tries and then you're out. That's how it works. It just it takes the solemnness out of voting, I think, when it's treated this way.
Well, they allowed you a write-in also.
One write-in per customer.
They allowed you a write-in, and I suggested, you know, what happens? Do they count the write-in? And they said, of course. I said, they didn't count mine. I voted for Mickey Mouse once and it never showed.
All right, Mort, thanks again.
Thank you.
All right.
Did you hear the cat cry?
I did hear it this time. I did. Oh,
the quest
Or Starbucks. Yeah,
my fault.
Oh, boy. Remember this? Wow, we had fun. We used to have fun back then. Wow, those are the good old days. Mort McCloskey, rest in peace. What a magical addition to WUSB. That's just a few seconds of Mort, who has graced our airwaves since the 1980s and passed away in the last week. All right, so a couple other things going on in the world. Of course, the horror of Buffalo. I don't know how many times we can simply say the same things over and over again when there's a mass shooting. This is a mass shooting and a white supremacist attack, a terrorist attack at the same time. I can't say there's really much to be surprised at. When you mix all these ingredients together, this is the kind of hatred that expresses itself. And if you don't do anything to address it, it just keeps happening over and over again. I think what's different now is that it's more in the mainstream, that you have people like Tucker Carlson basically preaching his racism and other people acting upon that very racism. And I feel like, you know, most of us have had enough of this, that we're really sick of this. This is not who we are. This is not the kind of country we want to live in. And thoughts and prayers aren't enough. We need to do more. We need to be outspoken. We need to be angry. We need to be loud. You know, we've seen that in the last couple of weeks with the leaking of the Roe versus Wade opinion and people daring to demonstrate outside the houses of Supreme Court justices. Oh my God, how dare they? We need to do similar things wherever it's needed. And it's needed in a lot of places right now. You know, today, President Biden went to Buffalo. And this is something I cannot wrap my head around. But basically, Republicans are angry that he went to Buffalo. Did you hear about this, Kyle? They're mad at him for going to Buffalo after this mass shooting. Because, you know, the ultimate whataboutism, well, you didn't go to this place when they were white victims or something insane like that. And this is what they fall back on. This is their logic now. Never to unite and to say, wow, we're living in a messed up place right now. We have to do something together. No, it's how we think you fell short and how we're the actual victims here. I mean, it's sickening.
Yeah, it's so cynical. I feel like they have more of an interest in it getting so bad that there is an actual backlash against white males that they can actually then dredge up as evidence for their oppression and victimization, which is really perfect for their little cynical ploy. But I don't think people are that dumb. We're tired of the roots of these problems, which have to do with really ready access to semi-automatic rifles like this. Mm-hmm. And ideology and the kind of white grievance and cultural dysmorphia, I think, of white individuals to the point where they really feel like the cultural identity of so many others is celebrated and their own has really no anchor other than white supremacy. And I find that entire trend is terribly wrong and ultimately not in the interest of white people as time goes on. I think the interest is being on the right side of this, protecting peace and unity and community and difference.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't get how you land on any other side of that unless you're already so bent out of shape that reality doesn't really have much of an effect on you. It's sad. It's horrible. It might be an opportunity for people to come together and realize that we have more in common than we have, opposition to each other. But I'm beginning to wonder if it's too late for that. You know, if we're so jaded that our initial reaction, our instinctive reaction right now is how does this benefit my side politically? You know, if we've gotten to that stage, I don't know how to fix it. I really don't. I can point over and over again and say, this is what happens when you have a lot of guns. This is what happens when you have a lot of rhetoric and propaganda and hatred spread around. Yeah, this is what happens. And you know what? It's happened before. It's not hard to figure that part out. The question is, what do you do to steer in a different direction?
I really, truly think it's about getting organized and staying in communication,
mm-hmm,
across communities, across faith, whatever it is, and solving this, like really attacking it as a problem, and identifying. The types of behaviors, identifying the warning signs, the red flags, the kinds of socialization and even systemic, of course, systemic things as well, like that are prodding and making this kind of discomfort surface,
mm-hmm,
and the disillusionment become more tempting than learning new ways of thinking about, you know, the past or your own identity or this sort of conflicts you might encounter in your world, maybe from your lack of understanding and stuff. And I think that ultimately the chaos of this actually contributes to more stereotypes and more what I really hate about it is misunderstanding. People having a bad experience and then projecting onto other people. I've encountered that. I don't, you know, in the moment I hate it, but you know, I accept it as like, okay, yeah, I'm terrible or whatever. You're stereotyping me. I get the confusion of it, but I find that chaos can get really out of control. And I think that happens a lot more, and I felt it as tension rises, as people feel these things are unresolved, especially like during George Floyd. Like you could definitely feel that, you know, people are not growing together; they're growing further apart culturally, and I don't know it; I just feel it. And I think that we need to really fight, like go against that, and say like, okay, we need to stay connected. We need to stay like on top of this as a people that have heard all of this before, that have seen it all before, that have seen the political ploys. Mm-hmm. Like, we need to stop being surprised by a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, you see, that's what I have difficulty with, is figuring out how people wind up on different sides of what seems to be so obvious. With George Floyd, you know, I had hopes at that particular time in history that maybe this is the event where we realize what hatred gets us and how we need to unite and stand up against this sort of injustice, namely, you know, police violence and literally getting away with murder. And instead, what wound up happening was there was this a propaganda movement that sought to label Black Lives Matter as some kind of terrorist organization, everybody in the street as thugs and people that just want to destroy the police and destroy communities and burn cities. And that actually caught with some people. They actually, you know, if you go to some places, some households and ask them about Black Lives Matter, that is how they will characterize it. You know, as people who have been to numerous Black Lives Rally Matters and never seen anything remotely close to that, that's insane. But it's, you know, how do you tell somebody that's insane when they firmly believe that that is the truth? And unfortunately, you know, even a situation like this, where somebody drives to Buffalo, New York, seeks out a black supermarket, a supermarket predominantly frequented by African-American people, and murders them, you know, and somehow that doesn't unite people to stand up against this sort of thing, somehow puts people against each other, somehow turns it into a political thing instead of a social, emotional thing. there is something seriously, seriously wrong with us. And we had better fix it, or we're not going to be able to recover from that.
I would just, yeah, see that and anticipate that in that moment that the political and radical sort of white supremacist actors will try to fill that, because it totally, that chaos, the backlashes or unrest itself serves their end, like their mission. And that, I think, is... That needs to be something we speak over. We speak completely over that in acknowledgement of it as sort of a background noise or like a baseline of chaos.
For the white supremacist angle, look no further than our local representative, Lee Zeldin, who will advocate for more guns, saying, yeah, if only those people in the supermarket had been armed. Yeah, that's what you want. A shootout with, you know, your 80-year-old grandmother and some crazy racist who's armed to the, you know, as much as anybody can be armed. More guns are not the answer. I mean, if anything should prove that, it's where we are now, because we've been on that kick for decades of more guns, and clearly it's not resulting in less violence or less shooting. That's not the answer. White supremacists, though, will want more of this. They will want more guns, more violence, more ways that they can blame minorities and say, look, see, this is why I need to be armed, because of what they're doing. It's sick. There's just no other word for it. We can't accept it as the foregone conclusion, how it has to play out. If we stand up, make ourselves heard, and believe in ourselves, and back each other up, instead of doing what we always do and infighting and not uniting against the true enemy to freedom, justice, peace, all that, we'll continue to lose. And that's not what I want to see. So when you hear people say things like Biden's a hypocrite for going to Buffalo and doesn't protect white people, when you hear nonsense like that, call it out. You know, I started my my new policy. Actually, it started yesterday on the 15th of May. But my policy is, if I walk into an establishment and they're playing Fox News, I walk out. Yeah, I'm not going to make a big scene, but I'm not going to give them my business. Maybe I'll tell them why I'm not giving them my business. And, you know, this extends to doctors and dentists and, anybody else. If you're doing that, you're going to lose me.
I was talking about this. You actually... you caught me off guard, and it occurred to me that they might charge you late fees at like a professional appointment.
I'm rescinding the late fees.
Well, it was interesting your response.
Yeah, I can do that. I can rescind the late fees.
I was wondering if you could charge back, have them charged for your late fees.
As of September 1st, that might be possible.
Yeah, it's the insult and injury clause.
Mm-hmm. Look, you got to fight back somehow. And, this latest thing, we have to end on this, but this is just related to the Roe versus Wade upcoming decision. Oklahoma Governor Kevin Stitt, happens to be a Republican, guess what side he landed on, he is warning the state's Native American tribes that if they allow abortion on sovereign land, he will intervene. Well, first of all, thank you, Governor, because I didn't even think of that. Yeah, you know what? That's sovereign land. Native Americans can do as they please on sovereign land. If they want to offer abortions, they can do that. This is a great way to solve this problem. And you're going to warn them against doing things on their sovereign... You know what? Keep that up. Keep doing that. See what happens. Because they have every right to do this. I support them 1,000%. He says, Oklahomans will not think very well of that if tribes try to set up abortion clinics. Really? You think so? I'll bet there's quite a few Oklahomans that will think highly of them for doing just that. And you know what? Those that don't, you don't have to get an abortion. How's that? How's that for a concession? I just cannot believe, I saw somebody on Twitter say in response to this, what are you going to do? Take away their land again?
Yeah, just the egregiousness of like using that kind of language. they, I think, as a people, would collectively roll their eyes and say, like, okay, we'll add it to the list of violations and broken, you know, treaties, etc. Like, it's our normal mode here. We're used to this, unfortunately.
Okay, you know what? I'm sorry. Our clock is wrong by a minute. So, Finn, we're going to run 1 minute into your show. We'll make up for it next week and,
so
and stop a minute
say.
Early. We're going out with the Moldovan entry for Eurovision. Didn't win, but it got up pretty high, and boy, it was a crowd pleaser. I'll say that. All about the train ride from Chișinău to Bucharest, which we did in reverse. Write to us otw@2600.com.
Thanks. Good talking to you. Thanks everybody for listening. Stay tuned for the revolution coming up.
Viva Moldova.
Mergem poate pricepi care țară, unde începe, țară veche, țară nouă, parcă-i una, parcă-s două, ba, parte, ba, preună, parcă-s două, parcă-i una. Hey, ho, let's go, folk, love, rock and roll, dacă trenul unde ești, Chișinău, București. Și-ntr-o țară și-n cealaltă joacă coră la olalt, fiind fiecare. Ce farme, ce vioară, când ajunge trenul gara, parcă n-ai ieșit din țară, parcă am mers fără să iasă, vii acasă, până acasă. Hey, ho, let's go, folklore and rock and roll, pleacă trenul, unde ești? Chișinău, București. Hey, ho, let's go, folklore and rock and roll, pleacă trenul, unde Hey ho, let's go, folklore and rock and roll, join the train.